League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello, everybody. Once again, the Initial Reaction podcast is live in your earbuds. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm from Lake Country Publications and now Newspapers.
You don't know that. Maybe they're listening on like a full surround sound system in their home. That's a very real possibility.
It's a very strong possibility. I do feel that technology would be wasted on this particular form of medium, but I don't
wish that on anybody. That would be really unfortunate.
I don't even know if I record this in stereo anymore. I think I mix it down to save space.
Tech update. My name is JP Gidor, and I work for Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, not Now Newspapers, and I think I win an award. Did you know that?
No. What's the award?
The only person to catch a cold on an 85-degree Memorial Day weekend.
Are you kidding me? How did you do that?
No. I don't know. If I knew how, I probably wouldn't have done it.
And so, thus, you are still nursing your cold unless you have some sort of superpower to get rid of it in 2 days' time.
No, developed it Saturday afternoon, was okay Sunday, and yesterday it just got bad.
I'd feel terrible for you, but I don't.
Okay, it meant I got to hang out, watch some sports.
Yeah, well, I had to do yard work. I wish I had gotten a cold. Instead, I have blisters on my hands. So, after like 20 minutes of raking, this is what happens to me. I'm useless.
Yeah.
I'm a useless person.
That sounds pretty par for the course with you and any sort of athletic activity.
Seriously, when the zombie apocalypse comes, I am going to be the first to die. Because, first of all, I can't do any, like, hands-on skill successfully. We have doorknobs in our house that don't work because I can't replace it without it breaking again, without it being... Never mind. I'm just useless. I don't even like Memorial Day because I'm so useless. I can't do any of the stuff in the yard that other people are doing. I'll screw it up.
Makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense.
Sports are happening all around us during the Memorial Day weekend. We'll talk about the NBA Finals a little bit. That was the excitement from the past few days, including a Memorial Day win for the Golden State Warriors to get into Game 7, or I should say to get into the, that was Game 7, to get into the conference, or the, you know, the NBA Finals against Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James. And wanted to start because we're pretty close here to the NBA draft. The finals, of course, will be going on over the next couple weeks. And then June 23rd or 25th, 23rd, I think, will be the big draft. And the Bucks will have the 10th overall selection. Henry Ellenson of Marquette should be a top 10 selection. So I just wanted to get your thoughts, JP. If you thought there was a chance that the Golden Boy, sort of from Milwaukee, he's really from Rice Lake, but played in Milwaukee, could end up staying in Milwaukee. What do you think of that?
He's got a chance. According to most mock drafts, he will be on the board at that time. NBADraft.net is my favorite. And right now they have him going 11th to Orlando. So there's certainly a chance. I think it's really hard to evaluate if they should take him because we look at him through such a different lens than everybody else. You know, I look at him because I saw him play at the Kohl Center, not with Marquette, but with Rice Lake, in the state finals. And so I just see this, you know, this kid from Rice Lake who's playing, as opposed to somebody like the kid from Utah, the Jakob Poeltl guy, who I just see as a NBA talent, a potential NBA talent. So it's a lot tougher to project how good Ellenson is going to be because we've seen him at Rice Lake and then Marquette, and he has such a different feel about him.
Yeah, I would say Jakob Poeltl is a pretty good comparison in that big man.
Jakob.
Yeah, did
Jakob
I say
Poeltl?
I said Jakob, did I not?
Yeah. No, I'm affirming and saying it once and for all. It is Jakob, and then the last name is
Poeltl.
Really European.
I think it's Poeltl. It looks like Poeltl, but it's Poeltl. I'm pretty sure.
It's, Well, that's if you Americanize it, from what I've been reading and told.
Okay, well, I don't care, because the Bucks have experience drafting people with terribly long, weird names. True. So, although this isn't long, it's
like
definitely strange.
Yeah. Like Joe Alexander.
Absolutely.
Super tufted.
So, I mean, I wouldn't be excited to get either guy. I mean, obviously, I'd be more excited about Ellenson because I've seen him play, like you have. But, I mean, you're talking about a guy, either way, Poeltl or Ellenson, a little bit of a project, not going to start right away. And the Bucks don't need a guy to start right away, which is exactly why they'll be drafting a player like that. So they really aren't married to a particular position unless they really feel like they can get a shooting guard. I don't know if there's going to be that guy available. Yeah. I mean, Deontay Davis from Michigan State, another, you know, probably 6'10", 6'11", guy, power forward. He'll be around there too. They're probably going to take one of those guys, depending on who's available. And it's a bummer because you're talking about a guy like three. It's just hard to get excited about a big man project. Those don't often come to fruition, or so it seems in Milwaukee anyway, anecdotally. So I wouldn't be thrilled up and down if they got Henry Ellenson, other than there's some pretty cool local intrigue, but I don't feel comfortable saying, oh yeah, that guy's going to be a future star or anything. I don't feel comfortable anybody at the 10th overall pick that's going to be a future star.
It's just so hard to get excited about this year's draft. I think it's because they're 10th, and it's because, you know, there's probably three to four guys I could get excited about. Simmons and Ingram, even though obviously they would have no chance. Buddy would be very fun to have. I don't know. I don't even know if he's going to be good in the NBA, but he would just be somebody to get excited about. And then for me, probably the only other one would be Chris Dunn from Providence, just because I know he is a fantastic scorer as well. But like even somebody like Scott Labissiere from Kentucky, was a huge name going into college, was not a huge name coming out of college. I mean, there's just so many, like Marquise Chris, who is the current projected draft pick at number 10. Like, who in the world can get excited about that? Please tell me and help me out, because I do not feel the same.
Yeah, Scott Labissiere would be really disappointing to me, only because, and obviously, there's no guarantee that if you're a top star in high school and you go to Kentucky that you're going to thrive. I would balk at trying to get somebody who is bad in college. I mean, he really struggled. The first half of the year, he was terrible. And then to think, oh, you're going to make the jump to the NBA 1 year later, that's, I don't know. Now, obviously, he's got a few years to marinate before he becomes a big-time player in the NBA anyway, but that would be the least exciting option for me. I'd love to see Buddy fall. He won't. He'll go before the Bucks pick, but that seems to be the guy that most fits their needs. And I know you want to think like Ted Thompson and not think that way, but they sure could use a guy who can just shoot and score, and that's the guy, Buddy Hield.
Don't worry, they won't get him. So that's
they
nice.
Won't.
Anything that you want won't happen, which is a good feeling to have.
Yes. It's just like Packers season, you mean. Yeah, because who saw Giannis attended as great a pick as that was? Nobody. Nobody in Milwaukee was like, oh, they got to get this Giannis guy. No one said that.
Now he's the absolute cornerstone of their franchise.
Yes. I guess Jabari
even
was...
Even more so than that guy who was the number two pick. I mean, they used 15 and turned it into the building block of their franchise.
Yeah, it was a marvelous pick. You have to wonder with the way they scout overseas, and sometimes information is so limited, and not to disparage the Bucks, I mean, that was a great pick, but you have to wonder even how much they knew this could happen. Like, yeah. I don't know how much they're really able to compare him, because he doesn't get to go up against a lot of competition that's going to be in the NBA, and I'm not sure they had any idea other than he projected well, and obviously that played out perfectly.
Yeah. I mean, he was on the Greece's B League team.
Right,
you know,
right.
He wasn't even in the top flight. So, I mean, they did good work, obviously, but they got lucky, and I think they'd probably admit that.
Yeah, he's due for a huge star turn. You know, look at the all-NBA teams, and of course, he doesn't get any votes. Totally understandable, but when he's running the point all year and just killing it on the stat sheet with triple-doubles left and right, he's going to be a big-time star in the NBA next year. That's unless he gets hurt. That's what I think.
Yeah. Safe bet.
The NBA Finals are, well, they're right around the corner now. LeBron James will finally try to get something for Cleveland, for Believeland, as he leads the Cavaliers from the Eastern Conference against the Golden State Warriors, who faced a 3-1 deficit. And if you ask Draymond Green, nobody thought they could do it, even though they won 73 regular season games. Nobody thought that they could overcome a 3-1 deficit against Oklahoma City, and that's exactly what they did. And spoiler alert, Draymond Green, everyone thought you could do it, and they did.
That is by far the most frustrating comment I have heard all year from a sports team. That is just the biggest load of crap. I'm glad you brought that up. Because for this team to be this good, they had to win three games, right? They were down 3-1. They had to win three straight games. Not only did they do that, you know, a lot during the season, they did that eight straight times to start the season. I mean, it's such crap that we buy into this underdog, especially Steph Curry, that he's this underdog player and an underdog team going up against the world. Just shut up. So I've been a big Golden State fan all year. I wanted them to get 73. I wanted them to win a title. But after hearing that and seeing the crap that Green is pulling on the court, I've officially switched over to Believeland.
It's definitely a pet peeve of mine as well, recognizing that everybody, there are a lot of athletes who draw inspiration from being the underdog or being sort of the guy nobody believes in. I mean, that's how a lot of these guys became good. Draymond Green became good because of that, because he was considered undersized. Nobody thought he was going to be an NBA player who could start for a really good team. I mean, nobody saw that coming. So I get that that's where the motivation comes from. As somebody who covers sports on a regular basis, I get sick of hearing it because frequently, and this is selfish, but frequently the media in giant capital letters becomes the reason why there's so much doubt. The media didn't believe in us, the media this, the media that, when in reality, the media is just reporting what they see. You know, if you lose the first, for example, 15 games of the season, yeah, and you're a baseball team, yeah, I don't think you're going to be good that year. Now, you could rally, but pretty much, I think it's safe to say there's no indication that you're going to be good. The Wisconsin Badgers this past year, there was no evidence to suggest they would go to the NCAA tournament. They found something within themselves to get better. It happens. But you can't blame the media or even fans for having those observations. But then you take it to this level where most people are thinking, yeah, they could probably come back from 3-1. If any team can, certainly the best team ever can. And to think that there is some sort of mythical doubter out there is a little bit of a reach for me.
Yeah, and like, there's nothing wrong with reporting the actual facts of the situation. You know, back in December, talking about the Badgers being whatever their record was. I don't even remember now because they've erased it so well, but there's nothing wrong with saying this team is not good enough to play in the NCAA tournament and then still praising them once they make the NCAA tournament. That's not wrong. I mean, God forbid that teams just get better. I mean, you were not very good then. You got better. That's okay. And it was the same with the Packers, too, I think, where they had their stretch of being awful. Okay, you're not very good. That's not demeaning you as a person. That's not saying that you guys can't be good, but you're just not good right now. And Golden State, for them to pull out that crap just sucks. It just sucks.
I do agree with you. I will be cheering for LeBron James, and it's not normally something I would do, but I kind of, first of all, want the series to be a pretty good one. Last year, Cleveland just didn't have the horses. They had a lot of injuries. They could not keep up with Golden State. This year, it's going to be a much fairer fight. And on top of it, we've seen through the Oklahoma City Thunder what it takes to really put Golden State on the ropes. And I would kind of like Cleveland to get something. I feel a little bit of empathy for Cleveland living in Milwaukee where the titles do not grow on trees. And I would kind of, even though I have one friend who's a Cleveland fan who whines about it all the time, but I would like it for him. I'd like it for the fans of Cleveland to finally have a pro sports title that they can really get excited about. Understanding that they get Ohio State football and had that whole, you know, dynasty to enjoy when it was happening. But still, like, it would be a cool thing for the city of Cleveland.
See, but in that aspect, I almost don't want them to do it. Because then I don't want them to shed that label, and then maybe some people start looking for other cities without championships and notice that the Milwaukee Bucks and Brewers have not exactly been the most successful franchise over the last, you know, three decades, four decades. How far back are we going? 71 for the city?
Yeah, so you don't want the sympathy, or you just don't want the attention of being the Loserville?
I don't want the attention.
Got it.
I don't want them to start looking at, well, the city of Milwaukee, obviously not the state of Wisconsin, but city of Milwaukee hasn't won since 71, and then all of a sudden there are articles on ESPN about the 82 Brewers and 2001 Bucks and how that's basically the biggest highlights that we've had since I've been alive.
It's a little, and even before, a little trickier because of the Packers. You know, it's understood that the fan base here is all in on the Packers and have had success there, and the Badger basketball team isn't local per se, but going to two Final Fours is pretty sweet. I guess you only get really the one Badgers title, the one Marquette title, the one Braves title, the one Bucks title, And like you said, 1971, the most recent of those. That's, you know, that's a long time. But it's still going to be hard to feel bad for the city of Milwaukee with the Packers.
But regardless of that, I actually like LeBron James. I think I've said this before. Like, I really like watching him and what he does. The only thing I can't stand is the self-centered antics of the powder during the opening lineups. And there's one highlight against Toronto where he went in for a dunk and then he backpedaled while screaming all the way past the half court line. Like, are you kidding me? So just stuff like that and yelling when he gets fouled. That self-centered crap I could do without. But other than that, I actually really like the guy.
Yeah.
So I will be on that trade.
Definitely agree with you. A little too much drama for my liking, but still, I'm going to pull for the underdog here. Should point out, Marquette's title came in 77. Technically, if we're talking about all the titles, that's the most recent, but whatever.
There we go.
Let's talk about the Milwaukee Brewers, whose title has never come to pass. Only the Milwaukee Braves can say that they won a World Series in this town. The Brewers had actually a pretty productive week leading into the holiday weekend leading into the week after the holiday with 5-6 against the Atlanta Braves and the Cincinnati Reds. The game they lost in that stretch came via some controversial means where the Cincinnati first of all tied the game with a 5-run inning. It was 6-1 Brewers, and then in the ninth on a very close replay that showed that Scooter Gennett took his foot off the bag right before he caught the ball, they ended up awarding it not as a double play. They awarded the runner second base. A go-ahead run scored on the play that would not have scored otherwise, and the Reds end up winning 7-6. And everybody is all up in arms about how instant replay once again found a way to ruin the game of baseball, which has sort of become a prevailing theme as we've gotten deeper and deeper into the post-replay era. I don't know how you feel about it, because I loved replay when it was first instituted. I still like it. I recognize there's a ton of problems.
You still like it against your team?
I do. I mean, I have a hard time reconciling the, yes, it takes too long. Yes, it happens too often. Yes, it stinks that a guy who didn't have any challenges left, that being Reds manager Brian Price, could just come out and challenge again, basically. I mean, that's not technically what happened, but he's allowed to bring it to the attention of the ump. And the ump who wants to get it right is, of course, you know, he's going to look at it again. So it seems a little silly the way the system is set up. But ultimately, I think it's important to get it right. That's what replay does, is it allows you to get it right. And, I mean, the Brewers didn't deserve to get the out on that play. I am frustrated by how it has evolved. I still think it's the right thing.
I would probably agree. I think that getting it right is probably the most important, and I think you use the correct word of deserve, that they didn't deserve that out. Like, yes, I agree that unless you slow it down, it is, I mean, it looks fine. It's a double play. But listen, you didn't do it right. I mean, like, in no other sport can you really not do it and get credit for doing it. You know, so I'm okay with it. I don't like it that it happened against the Brewers. I don't like that is such a technicality that, like, of course that runner was out. Of course he was out. But if you don't touch the bag the way you're supposed to, I don't really have any sympathy for you.
I agree with that. And even if we made tweaks to the system, it doesn't mean that the Brewers would get that out there. I mean, that's sort of the back burner issue on all of this, is people claiming the replay is such an awful thing. Well, I mean, still, the Brewers shouldn't have gotten the out. There's no scenario where they deserved, where they were wronged by the system. That said, I don't understand how we're still at this point after a couple years of this, where we have this archaic challenge system where you get a certain number of challenges. If you get, you know, you get one or two if you get the first one right, and then you, not after the seventh inning, but you can go out there and state your case. And like I said, of course the ump is going to look at it. They want to get it right. I just feel like there needs to be a system in place where there's an on-site official who somehow has the ability to look at a play again and, you know, like turn on a red light behind home plate or something that says, you know, let's take a look at this. It's under review for the moment. They could do everything very seamlessly. There's no challenge involved. There's no let's go back to New York and take a look at it. There's somebody up in the booth with a camera, with a replay camera at his disposal. He can look at these plays, and if it's a situation where you have to challenge, he can go through that. He or she can go through that and look at that. I realize that's not perfect.
I would disagree, though, because I don't want literally – that would mean literally every play is subject to review. I don't want to wait for approval for a light to go on before we get to move on with the game. I think that the challenge system might be archaic, but I think it's best where you need to initiate it as a team. You need to have a problem with what happened, because if you're just approving every single play, that could get lengthy.
It could. You're right. I think, though, that this system, not perfect, but would still enable sort of a greater restrictions on how long these replays can go. There can be sort of the, okay, after 2 minutes, you have to just go with what you see because it's too close to call. There has to be that restriction now, then, whenever. There has to be a line that we say, because the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, he's very concerned about the pace of play. He's talked about that. You can't let replay go longer than 2 minutes, especially in a ballpark where it's becoming, it used to be that I thought those plays that were under review were always up on the video board, and that's true by and large, but I've been to a game where there's nothing on the video board. We so rarely, as fans at the game, get to know what's going on unless we pull out our phones and look at Twitter. Like, that's pretty frustrating to me. I don't want to be the last guy to know, and I'm sitting 5 feet away from first base. That is frustrating.
You're the one who paid for it.
No doubt. So I think that needs to be looked at, but I do think this system would enable some sort of greater streamline. I mean, they're not going to look at every play. If it's a close play at first, but it's the first inning with nobody on, like in the Brewers-Reds game where they reviewed the very first out of the game, that probably wouldn't happen under the new system. It would probably be safe for higher leverage situations. I know that doesn't necessarily speak to always getting it right, but I don't think it would be this constant reoccurrence. It would just be like, you know, okay, there was a close play in the outfield. It looked like he trapped the ball. They ruled it was a catch. I'm going to quick look at it. I got really good technology. I can just rewind real quick and look at it. And if it's no doubt, fine. We'll move on. I won't turn any light on. But if there's a question now, all right, now I'm going to pause it for just 30 seconds and take another look.
But then it's just, it's in the hands of one guy.
And it should be. I mean, it is in the hands of one guy anyway, we assume. It's not like there's six people pouring over a monitor in New York. Actually, we don't know really what's happening, but it's still going to come down to somebody's judgment. Why can't it be someone at the game, or I don't care, in New York, I don't know, but somebody whose job it is to solely be responsible for this replay system, because there's just too many machinations to make this work.
So what are you doing with your system here? Are you tweeting your boy Rob and telling him to listen to you and your system, or what?
Well, I should be. Clearly, I have the answer, JP. I am the future.
You're just sending out your complaints out into the podcastosphere and just annoying us all with
I mean, everyone listens to us, so I'm sure someone important will
that
pass this along.
That is fair, including our prep sports fans, because this is fun right now. There are
so great.
Especially last week, there were seemingly regionals or sectionals every single day, I want to say, in between golf, tennis, track and field. I mean, it was magical for a while.
Especially with the rainouts and softball, you had games that were getting postponed from Friday halfway through into Saturday. So yes, it's a fun time to be a prep sports fan. My favorite, we talked about this last week, my favorite thing to cover in the spring is the state track and field meet. That comes Friday and Saturday at the University of Wisconsin La Crosse Memorial Stadium. Great setting, great setting for high school track and field. Can be a little bit unpredictable weather-wise, but if you can live with that, you got some bluffs in the background at the stadium. It's kind of a cool thing, I think, for people from the Milwaukee area and Madison area to have to drive a little ways to make it feel like a destination more so than what they're typically used to for a postseason tournament. So I'm all on board with it. I love it. I'll be there to cover it. Great stories that come of it, great photos, and my colleague, Stephen Altietz, who knows more about state track than just about anybody, he sat down with me so we could chat about it, talk about some of the storylines to come from the 2016 meet. My guest is Stephen Altietz, track aficionado extraordinaire for Now Newspapers and Lake Country Publications, for that matter. Pretty much everything in suburban Milwaukee. Track and field is something Steve Tietz is familiar with. How you doing, Steve?
I am doing great today, J.R.
This is a fun time of year for you, I know, getting ready for the state track and field meet. Me as well. I very much enjoy it, and there's lots of storylines to follow this year. I guess we'll start with something you know pretty well. Cami Davra, one of the greatest distance runners the state has ever produced. She has a chance to amend her own, I believe, already state record in the 800, and then she'll be looking for another state record in the 1600. I mean, I'm thinking this is going to be, with distance running, usually if you're the favorite to win, you're at least in the conversation to win, and it would seem like it seems like Davra is going to help Whitefish Bay go a long way toward repeating as team champion.
Cammy is doing very well this spring. In fact, I had a chance to talk to her at the North Shore Conference. I mean, she is looking for a good race because there's just not as quite as much depth at the top levels in the girls' distance running this season. Being that said, she still respects all the competition, and she's really, really looking forward to a few really good races. When I talked to her the other day, she wasn't mentioning anything about records yet, but I'm sure that's in the back of her mind. If she were to pull off the 800 and the 1600, that would bring her up to a remarkable total of seven, count them, seven state titles, and she's still only a junior.
Now, when I say Whitefish Bay will be the mixed repeat as team champion, that's true. It's But it's pretty crowded at the top. If you play out the seeds, which never works, but let's say you do that as a thought experiment, Wauwatosa West, at least by my math, is actually the team to beat. They build their team differently than Whitefish Bay in that they've got, they're very sprint heavy, although Whitefish Bay has Caitlin Jackson, who's one of the better sprinters around. But, I mean, Tosa West is in the mix. You can't count out like Brookfield East could get their hat in the ring there. Milwaukee King is one of the big ones. So, I mean, do you have any sense of who might be able to pull it out here on the girls' side?
I'm not sure how it's going to play out on the girls' side. Bay is going to be a little thinner than it has been in the past because they do not have a strong relay to go along with it. They've had some injuries, some people didn't come out, and they just weren't able to put together either a 4x400 or 4x800, and that's going to cost them some key points at the end. Be that on the team title route, I just don't know how this thing is going to shake out. There is just so much balance out there on the girls' side. What's going to be key on the girls' side is how all these 400 runners and 4x400 relays play a role in the title, because this is a golden age for 400 running for both boys and girls, but especially on the girls' side. It's going to be just fun to watch, see how many teams actually break 4 minutes in the 4x400 relay, and how many girls go maybe sub 56, maybe even sub 55 in the 400, which was basically unheard of a few years ago.
Yeah, already a bunch of teams in that 56, 55 range just to even get to state. And I was going to ask if that was, I know you're very impressed with the 4x4, if that was the storyline that really has jumped out at you this year, the times.
You know, this has been evolving for the last several years. A lot of these teams, coaches have adopted the old the Baylor method of coaching, focusing on the 400 and using it as the base for all distance events from the 100 meter dash all the way through the 800. And you see that in Wisconsin, the 4x200, the 4x400, the 4x800 events have all gotten progressively much, much faster and much deeper over the years, both on the boys and the girls side. And correspondingly, there's a lot more depth in the individual races, 400 and 800 too. It's made for some absolutely astounding races up at La Crosse.
The Hamilton girls are the defending 4x4 Division I champ. They're not even one of the top seeds this year, and they brought all four kids back. I don't know if all four kids are going to run on that relay, but that's just sort of a testament to the depth that you see in this particular event. Another storyline that I like to watch, as far as Hamilton goes, is Claire Burke. She's a runner in the hurdles. She had, I believe, a stress fracture or a pretty bad leg injury, missed a month, came back for the Greater Metro Outdoor, and was an honor roll hurdler right away. She took second in the sectional in the 300 hurdles. She took second last year at state, so that's kind of a cool story. And at Brookfield East, you could have a boys and girls champion in the long jump, brother and sister combination. Allie Bullen and Drew Bullen are both among the best. Allie, I know, has the top seed. I think Drew does as well, or at least maybe he's second. But that would be a cool thing, brother and sister state champ in the same event.
Yes, it would be. Drew's a very interesting story. He was injured for half the year, and he came back, and then he went to the Greater Metro Conference Relays and then popped a state best 23.7
no big
long
deal.
Jump. Yeah, just basically essentially came back for that meet. No, those two have been a terrific, terrific storyline. And getting onto that boys' side, Drew will lead another strong Brookfield East team.
Mm-hmm.
And they were a three-time titleist a few years ago, and Mike Steiner and company are doing it again. This time they're building around very, very strong sprint relays. They're well ahead of the field in the 4x100 and a great contender in the 4x2. But it's just a testament to what that coaching staff does, that they're able to pull out all the best athletes in that school and get them to compete very, very hard.
Yeah, Badger football fans probably know the name Alec James. He's sort of a rising star on the defense there. He was part of the 4x1, and I believe even he might have even been on the 4x4, although I don't think he was. But they, I know, won the 4x4 and or took second in the final event of the meet to win a third straight title a couple years back. It was a surprise then. The first two, not so much, but the third one in a row was a surprise. And Brookfield East now, just a couple years later, have already rebuilt themselves into another powerhouse team. Mario Carr is a guy who shows up on a relays and also in the hurdles. That's a guy who's going to be scoring big points for them. So definitely one of the top teams to watch on the boys side. Any other storylines on the boys side? I mean, you cover Caleb Ogden of Oak Creek, who doesn't have a top seed in the 200 and 400, but could easily come away with both titles.
He is easily the favorite in both of those races. He has been priming himself for this ever since his stunning loss to Jack Wallenstein in the 400 final last year after going in a heavy favorite. I've spoken to him a little bit. He is highly motivated. He's got a laser beam intensity right now. And furthermore, he's got the motivation. He also wants to lead that 4x400 to victory. They have got the fastest time in the state by a wide margin at 3:18.9. Unless something happens to his health, I do not see Caleb losing the 400, and he's definitely going to be one of the favorites in the 200. He's an interesting character. He set that unofficial state record in the 400, and I believe that was the junior national meet last year. And I don't think he's really hit his peak yet. It'll be very interesting to see if the weather cooperates next week and what he can really do.
Yeah, another kid you see, Josh Arachi of Franklin, is also a guy who could come away potentially with a sprint title. If I jumped on real quickly to Division Two, I think, well, this actually would be D2 and D1. On the girls' side, we're kind of seeing a little bit of a sprint revolution with Brooke Jaworski of Wausau West and J.C. Simmons of Milwaukee Lutheran, both freshmen, both popping some incredible times in the sprints. J.C., I believe, in the 1 and the 2, and Jaworski in the 2 and the 4. I mean, this could be a serious passing of the baton. Some state records are going to be in danger, right?
Right, yes. I saw Simmons at the North Shore Conference meet, and she beat Jackson in both those races, and I was stunned at how far Jackson was behind. But then I got a hold of the times, and I said, oh, Jackson did not run badly at all.
Right.
No. It's just an overall trend this year. We had big senior classes overall in track in the last couple of years, and now we're just seeing a great influx of really, really talented youngsters, both on the boys and girls side. It's going to be really, really interesting to see how all these precocious kids pan out the next few years. But yeah, Simmons is a strongly built sprinter, very fluid. I am really looking forward to see how she handles the state pressure. I have not seen the Jaworski kid yet, but I am really, really anxious to see her because she started popping under sub-60s indoors. So everybody knew she was the real deal. So, and their relay is one of the 4x4 relay is one of the top in the state right now.
In the field events, Brooke Blasey of Martin Luther, a two-time state champ in the high jump. She's just a junior. She could theoretically win it all 4 years, so we'll see if she can make it a third straight. On the boys' side, you've got Cole Van Lannen of Bayport. Speaking of Badger football players, guys you might be familiar with, he's a Badger football recruit, a great offensive lineman. The heavy, heavy favorite to win both the discus and the shot put on the boys' side. Oh, you disagree with me.
The discus, there are a lot of people in the discus, right? He is sitting currently like 13 feet behind the leader right now in the discus. One of the Kimberly produces weightmen over and over again. They've got three underclassmen.
Yeah, they've been doing this
north,
for years.
Well over 50 feet, and one is in the 60-foot range along with Van Lannen in the
right
shot, and will likely push him in Friday's shot put competition.
Kimberly, not long removed from their own state championship on the boys' side. Their field events are a big piece of that puzzle, so they will always be a team to contend with. But are there any other storylines, any other kids that maybe are just bubbling underneath the surface? It's so interesting with sectional results. You never really get the whole picture. You never know who's coming back from injury or who's, you know, just waiting for that breakout. Sometimes kids win that we don't even see seated in the top eight. Is there anybody else that you really think we should be keeping an eye on?
One guy I cover directly, the hurdler out of the falls, Bryce McMurtry. He has been among the state's best all year. He was a third place finisher in the highs last year. He has put together good times all season long. He didn't have the greatest sectional, but he's still comfortably qualified. He is just a ferocious competitor when you put him in against against people who are going to push him. It would not surprise me to see him win at least one of those races, if not both, if he is really pushed and has a really good day.
And we talked about this guy on the podcast last week, but from the Lake Country, Robert Wagner of Pewaukee, somebody who's highly regarded. He's no secret, but he's going to have some tough battles in the 1600 and 3200 with a couple of elite kids from the Madison area. There should be some really spirited battles all the way to the finish in those distance events. Could be some pretty engaging stuff.
I saw him. Yeah, he coasted in the 3200 after posting an absolutely ridiculous race in the 1600 at the sectional. He looked very smooth, very fluid. It looked like he was just ramping up to have a big, big weekend at state. He looks really, really ready to do the job. But there's some serious, serious competition in those distance races right now. The field in the 1600 is so deep. There are so many kids at 417 and under. This could be, that 1600 race could be one of the best of all time, if not the best of all time, if the conditions are right.
And hopefully they are. Hopefully the weather holds off. That's always the concern for those of us who go to cover lacrosse. We'll knock on wood about that. And safe travels, Steve, out there. And we'll have to talk again afterwards.
And we'll make some sacrifices to the weather gods and absolutely hope for the best. And yes, we're hoping for a serious fun time next weekend.
Thanks to Steve for joining us and talking a whole bunch about state track. We have a huge state track right now. It's a preview page. It'll be the home for all of the content from the state meet. You can check that out when you visit Lake Country Now and MyCommunityNow.com. You can find the links I've tweeted out on Twitter as well, at J.R. Radcliffe. That's R-A-D-C-L-I-F-F-E. You can check out the whole page. We've got athletes to watch, past winners, all kinds of fun stuff, lots and lots of pictures. And that'll be updated, like I said, when the 2016 meet gets underway. We can add some new stuff to it.
Yeah, it's awesome. I'm very envious of you and others who get to go cover it. Because like you said, the setting is fantastic. And what's cool but also really intimidating about it is like every event has its own, basically it could be its own full-length feature story. Because whoever that athlete is or athletes usually have some sort of history with, like, you know, they placed eighth in the previous year and then fourth and now this year they won it, or a lot of them are going on to college to perform in any number of sports. So like each individual event has so much behind it. And then also, you know, oh yeah, there's like 75 events with winners. So it is an awesome event.
And when I go, I know a lot about the Division I field. I know a handful of the athletes in D2. But then I'm watching the D3 stuff. I don't know any of these kids. And then you see them celebrate, even if they take like 7th or something. And you're thinking, man, there's a whole story there. There's a whole story why that kid is so excited. And I'm sure the reporter who covers that school knows all about it. There's so much depth to it. It's so rich with stories, like you said, and it's fun, and it gets a little redundant, like, okay, all the kids from the 100 come through. Well, why was today such a good day to run fast? The 200 comes through. Well, why was such a good day to run fast? You know, you run out of questions. There's only so much you can ask about, you know, running fast or hurdling well or jumping high. But it is really, really cool, the number of kids. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes taking 7th or 8th is the biggest thing in these kids' lives. They had no intention of winning, or at least they didn't think they could with their times, and they did exactly what they needed to do. Maybe they set a school record or a personal best, and that is just as meaningful to them. So it's a fun, fun thing to do.
Awesome, awesome stuff. So you enjoy that, as well as everybody else who will be following their loved ones, their friends, neighbors, children, etc. And in the meantime, on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, we will just continue to be awesome in every aspect, specifically with regard to Packers OTA coverage, Brookfield East tennis coverage, and Divine Savior Holy Angels softball coverage.
Sounds good. State tennis also this weekend, like I said. Check out that state track and field page at Lake Country Now and MyCommunityNow.com and get ready for the big one. And we've got lots of coverage from all the state tournament events. State soccer and baseball are underway in earnest this week, as well as I mentioned, softball sectionals are this week and tennis. It's going to be good.
Beautiful. All right, I am digging back into the Kleenex box, so you just enjoy your health.
I will. I will breathe deeply and easily, and we will talk to you again next week.
Gross. I hate you.
Bye, friends.
Bye.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.